Greetings, and welcome to a special edition of Catastrophe Cast. My name is Walter, and today I'm going to recap some of the catastrophes that happened during 2016. I've gone through and pulled out a dozen different catastrophes, one for each month, and did a little bit of research on them. Not as extensive as usual, because this is a podcast. I don't want to get as deep into each and every one of the 12 subjects, but a little bit of information about them, put them out there, and share. The list is going to include a little bit of everything, natural, man-made, and also man-caused. There are going to be some things on the podcast that some people may take offense to, or they may just be controversial. The thing is, loss of life is always a catastrophe, so why not talk about it? The subject of January 2016 is the Old Illiamna earthquake. Now, Old Illiamna is a former town in the state of Alaska. It was moved in 1935 from where the town used to exist to the new town. In January of 2016, they had a 7.1 earthquake that shook in Old Illiamna. The site of Old Illiamna is about 160 miles away from the most populated city, which is Anchorage. My sister actually still lives in Anchorage and was working at the time. She works nights. The earthquake struck at about 1:30 in the morning on January 24th. And like as I said, my sister was working. She said that it was the first earthquake in a while that shook her, that, made her nervous. When you live in Alaska, you just get used to the earthquakes that happen. But this one, being a 7.1, it actually did a little bit of damage and got more than a few people nervous. There were quite a few homes that were lost. There were gas leaks and water main breaks. And two buildings that I spent time in when I was a kid in Alaska, the West High School Library and the University of Alaska Student Union, they were both damaged. And you got to remember, this is 160 miles away from the epicenter, but as a 7.1 earthquake, it was able to actually do some damage that far away. February brought us the bombing of Da'alo Airlines Flight 159. Now, this is not something that was reported much in Western press that I can remember back from February, but the flight took off from Mogadishu in Somalia about 11 a.m. local time. There were 74 passengers and 7 crew on. About 20 minutes into the flight, there was an explosion. It caused a hole to be ripped into the fuselage near the wing and very, very close to where the fuel tanks are. The flight crew immediately started moving people away from the area. The plane sat about 220 passengers, so seeing as how there were only 74 passengers on board, it was easy to move everybody away from the dangerous area. At the same time as the cabin crew was moving passengers, the pilots reacted to the incident as if it was just a pressurization problem. They thought, a door has popped or something. Let's get the plane settled down so we can, get these people to safety. They turned the flight around and landed back in Mogadishu. There were only 2 injuries reported, and it could have been much, much worse. Upon landing, they realized that there was only one passenger that was lost, and that passenger was the bomber. His body was thrown out of the airplane through the hole in the fuselage and was found near the city of Balad in Somalia. The investigators found that it was a bomb carried out by a passenger, and most likely the bomb was timed with a laptop. Since the plane was not at the cruising altitude yet, that contributed greatly to what saved them. The flight wasn't supposed to be in danger to begin with. On February 2nd, the original flight was a Turkish Airways flight, and that flight was canceled. So 69 passengers, including the bomber, were rerouted to Da'alo Airlines Flight 159. They were going to be sent from Mogadishu to another city, and then in that other city, I believe it was Djibouti, picked up and sent on to another Turkish Airlines flight. There was a delay getting them out that day, so because of the flight was delayed, that led to the bomb going off early in the flight. So that really, that delay actually saved just about everybody's life, because if that bomb would have gone off while they were at cruising altitude, it would have been much, much worse. The bomber was the only person that died. He did have accomplices, some on the plane and some who worked at the airport, and they were soon arrested. In March, we saw the Lahore suicide bombing. As we have seen, if you pay attention to the news, there is absolutely no country that is safe from a terrorist attack. On Sunday, March 27th, in Lahore, Pakistan, there was a celebration going on at one of the biggest parks. The park, and I apologize for the pronunciation, but the park is called Gulshan-e-Iqbal, and it is one of the biggest parks in Pakistan. The fact that it was not just Sunday, but Easter Sunday is most prevalent, because there were Christians celebrating at Gulshan-e-Iqbal Park, and they were celebrating Easter that day. At 6:30 p.m., there was an attack by religious extremists that left 75 people dead. 15 of them of the dead were Christians, 61 of them were Muslims. The majority of the people who were killed by this bomb were women and children. Because of the extent of the damage, the area ran out of ambulances. They didn't have enough to take the injured, so what happened were taxis and rickshaws were brought in to carry people to the hospitals where they could get their care. The attack came just 2 weeks after similar attacks on Christian churches in Lahore. The good thing that came out of this was this happened on Sunday, March 27th. On Monday, arrests were already being made, and there were major arrests being made and lots of questioning, like 200 different people who were questioned and picked up by Tuesday, March 29th. So a bad situation, but it could have been, the picking up of these people possibly prevented more people from being killed. In April, we saw the Puttingal Temple fire. Now, religious celebrations are supposed to be just that. They're celebrations. And every religion tends to do something the way that their religion does it. So people will celebrate how they are, how they are taught and what their traditions call for their religion. In southern India, it's very common to have firework celebrations in conjunction with different religious festivals. Well, the festival that they were dealing with, it was the last day of the festival, celebrating the goddess Bhadrakali. And Hindus were setting off different fireworks. They even had a competitive firework display as part of the celebrations. At about 3:30 a.m. local time, a stray lit firework somehow got tossed in with a whole stash of other fireworks that were in storage to be used later. The stash then exploded, which caused the storage building, the temple, as well as a nearby office building to go up in flames. There were also about 150 houses that were burned down because of this. As a result, 111 people died and 350 people were injured. May saw the crash of Egypt Air Flight 804. This is probably one of the catastrophes that everyone has heard about. The incident is actually still under investigation. Egypt Air Flight 804 took off from Paris and it was bound for Cairo. It was the fifth flight of the day for that specific aircraft, and the flight was supposed to land in Cairo at about 3:05 a.m. local time. There were no abnormalities found during the during the flight from the flight crew. Nobody radioed anything back and forth saying there was anything, there were any issues. But avionics sent messages via their automated system that there was smoke in one of the lavatories. You've probably heard that it's not just the captain, co-pilot, talking to air traffic control, but the system itself, the airplane itself, has a system to connect with the manufacturer or the airline back at the home base, giving them different bits of information they need to know. Well, this automated system found that there was smoke in one of the laboratories. The flight was at about 37,000 feet and then just disappeared from radar. It crashed at 2:33 a.m. local time into the Mediterranean Sea. If you go through the timeline, there are quite a bit of pieces of information that have been stated and then walked back. For example, Egyptian military said that there was a distress signal that was sent out from the plane, but then they retracted that statement. Greek officials said that the aircraft changed its heading by about 90 degrees to the left and then did a 360 to the right before it crashed. Egyptians said that that's just not possible because the flight was way too far for Greece to be able to monitor. Some U.S. officials involved in the investigation say that, well, there was a bomb involved. But other U.S. officials say that there's absolutely no evidence for a bomb. The latest information from Egyptian officials say that there were traces of a bomb that was found on several of the bodies that were covered. Thing is, the French are doubting that story. They don't know that it is true. So that information just came out about 15 days ago. Whatever happened, hopefully we will get an answer sometime in 2017. In June, we saw the Orlando nightclub shooting. Now, this may be controversial to include, but I'm doing it anyway. A lot of people don't realize that it is the deadliest mass shooting by a single shooter in the United States history. And it is also the deadliest attack on gay and lesbian people in the United States in the history. If you remember back to podcast 13, that was the upstairs lounge fire. That, at the time, back in the 70s, was the largest, deadliest attack on gay people in the United States. Well, the Orlando nightclub shooting that happened at the Pulse nightclub surpassed that. Pulse nightclub is in Orlando, Florida. It was a huge club. It was started by a woman in honor of her brother who had died of AIDS. Omar Mateen, a United States-born Muslim, went to the nightclub. In a three-hour standoff, he managed to kill 49 people and he wounded 53 others. Again, this situation is still being investigated. We still don't know a lot about what happened. There's no link between Mateen and ISIL or ISIS, which is generally the organization that you see in the news when it comes to Islamic terrorism. So hopefully we will get closure on this sometime soon. July saw the second deadliest hot air balloon crash in the history of the world. Now, you don't generally think of hot air balloons as something that could be dangerous. They're a slow-traveling craft, and they're beautiful in the sky. I tend to think they're rather really safe, so finding out about this kind of shocked me. The hot air balloon was operated by the Heart of Texas Balloon Ride Company, and it took off at about 7:10 a.m. local time. It took about 30 minutes for them to traverse about an 8-mile area, and when about 7:40 a.m., the balloon struck a power line. At that point, everyone was electrocuted and or burned to death when the balloon and the gondola went up in flames. There were 16 people on board, including the owner of the balloon ride company. They all died. Like I said, this is the second deadliest balloon incident worldwide. August, we had the toxic gas leak in Chittagong, Bangladesh. Now, I will preface this by saying we all know how dangerous fertilizers can be. Fertilizers are responsible for many, many fires, many, many explosions throughout the industrial time period that we've been producing them. They were just responsible for many, many people dying. If they're handled incorrectly or maliciously, as you can think of the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, fertilizer can act like a bomb. Bangladesh itself has seen its share of disasters. And on August 23rd, a fertilizer caused a new disaster that sickened a great deal of people. On August 22nd, the day before, a gas tank exploded at the DAP fertilizer company. That explosion caused a great deal of damage to different facilities that were being used by the company and caused a ammonia gas leak, which sent out an ammonia cloud up to 250 tons of gas. There were about 100 people that were hospitalized due to the toxic gas release. There's a pond that is quite nearby the DAP fertilizer company. It's more of a fish farm. And one worker at the pond said that there were about 10 tons of fish that died when this toxic gas was released. The gas leak, you know, caused by the explosion, had a lot of different contributing factors, like the fact that the tanks were maintained. They were supposed to be maintained by skilled engineers. But instead, the company said, you know, they sent in a whole bunch of low-level workers who had no information on how to properly deal with these tanks. And they were supposed to do the repairs on them. Lots of the different gauges that were installed on these tanks just were broken at the time, so that's what caused the initial explosion. There wasn't even periodic maintenance being done on these tanks. They're, you know, they were cutting corners to try and save money, and it ended up almost killing people. Ironically, this is the only catastrophe from 2016 in this podcast that actually had no deaths. The only saving grace, and the reason that this didn't go any worse than it possibly could have, was that the airflow that day was to the west, which was towards an airport, as opposed to the population area, which was to the east. If this airflow had been different, this accident would have had a much, much darker outcome. In September, we had the boiler explosion at Tongi. Now, staying in Bangladesh, this incident occurred just a few weeks after the Chittagong incident. And if you're a smoker, or if you've purchased any snacks from Nestle, then you may actually have a connection, because this incident happened at the Tampaco Foils factory. Tampaco Foils produces foils and other wrappings for different tobacco companies and for the food giant Nestle. Oddly, I actually could not find a lot about the cause of the fire. It just happened to be a fire that broke out that caused a boiler to explode. However, Bangladesh itself has horrible standards. If you look through the history of Bangladesh and industrial accidents, you'll see that there are a ton of accidents that have happened throughout over the years that have killed, you know, thousands and thousands of people. We do know that the fire broke out at the Tampaco Foil factory. They were using, at the time of the fire, about twice as much as gas as they were supposed to be using. When the fire broke out, the boiler soon exploded, and that led to building collapse and entrapping a whole bunch of people. In all, either 35 or 47 workers were killed. There are conflicting reports on it. Some say 35, some say 47. And there were dozens of others injured. There were people that had to, there were bodies rather, that they have to have DNA from families to try and be able to match them up with their correct family. October is death at an amusement park. Now, amusement parks are here exactly for that, for our amusement. But on October 25th, four people got into a water ride at Australia's largest amusement park and died. As one person said, the ride was one of the most tame at the amusement park. It was called Thunder River Rapids. And if you've ever ridden a water ride at an amusement park, you know that they are pretty much just, you know, you get into a gondola, you get into a raft of some kind, and you have a little bit of, you know, rapids here and there, but generally they're very, very safe. Well, four people, two men and two women, got into the ride just after 2 p.m. local time. The bucket device that they were riding in was going up a conveyor belt, because that's how all the water rides start. You go up a conveyor belt and you go down and you maybe splash down, you maybe go around a corner or such. They went up, but the conveyor belt malfunctioned. Two people were thrown from the bucket and were killed instantly, and then there were two others that were trapped inside after their bucket turned them upside down. They were trapped in it, and they died that way. Now, horrifically, because of all the cameras that are in use today, these four people's deaths were all caught on CCTV. November is the Great Smoky Mountains wildfires. Now, we have wildfires every year, and 2016 is no different. One thing that contributed to the horribleness of the Great Smoky Mountains wildfires was that Tennessee was experiencing drought conditions, which really impacted the ferocity of the fire when the humidity levels in Tennessee dropped to as low as 17%. The fires were originally reported on November 23rd, but because of where they were and because of some natural boundaries, the officials thought, well, this isn't going to be bad. We can just let them burn out. They'll have a natural place to burn out and stop at. So no suppression was being done. 4 days later, on the 27th, a decision, though, once the fire got a little bit more out of control, to start suppression, and Chinook helicopters were dispatched to draw water out on the flames to hopefully put it out. The drought plus high winds that started around that time caused the fire to spread a great deal, and though it's mostly out, from what I can tell, the fire is actually still continuing to this day. In all, 14 people have died and 134 people have been injured. This is the second deadliest wildfire in United States history, with more than 2,000 buildings either damaged or destroyed. And this fire, like other man-caused incidents, was preventable. Why? It's because it was caused by two juveniles. That's all the information we have. We know that there are two underage kids that started this fire. We don't have any other information about them, what their names, their ages, their genders, whatever. But because of the extent of this damage, these two, when their identities are revealed, may actually be charged and tried as adults. In December, we have the loss of a Russian Defense Ministry airplane. Now, this flight happened on Christmas Day, which at the time of this recording was just a week ago. The plane, the Tupolev Tu-154, if you're familiar with the Boeing 727, they have three different engines, one on the tail and two on the sides. That is what a Tu-154 looks like. It took off from Sochi and was bound for Syria. It was taking the Alexandrov Ensemble Choir, which is the official choir of the Russian Armed Forces, to a New Year's performance for the troops in Syria. The plane was only airborne for about 2 minutes before it crashed into the Black Sea, about a mile off of the Sochi coast. It only took 2 days to get both the cockpit voice recorder and the flight data recorders recovered, which is a good thing. They're right now in Moscow for analysis. So far, Russia isn't saying it's an act of terrorism, and they've blamed it on either mechanical error or human error. As a result of that declaration, all Tu-154s in Russia have been grounded. So, no cause has yet been found, but a preliminary examination of the cockpit voice recorder says that there was no evidence of an explosion. We hope to hear the cause of this in the coming months. So that's it. a recap of some of the incidents that occurred in 2016. I know that I've been lax on regular updates, but I'm going to try and work on it. I'm doing a lot more writing than I have in the past, which is taking up most of my time, and I actually have quite a few more books planned. But what I'm going to do is I'm kind of marking one day a month to try and sit down, write a script, and do all the research, and then to do a podcast. So I'm going to try to do this at least once a month. So that means I'm still taking your suggestions. If you have suggestions, please let me know. You can go to the webpage at catastrophecast.com, and there is a What Do You Want to Hear link at the top. Leave me a comment there. You can email me, podcast@catastrophecast.com. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/catastrophecast, or you can connect with me on Twitter. The Twitter handle is @catastrophecast. Thanks for listening.